Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 60 Minutes ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Even before the pandemic, American kids have been dealing with a crisis. Rising rates of suicide, self-harm, anxiety, and depression.
Your generation got hit with this in what's supposed to be kind of a fun, carefree time. What was lost? What did you guys lose during the pandemic?
Myself.
Yourself?
Yeah.
This we're saving. I mean, you can see.
We Americans spend 90% of our time inside buildings. Well, we found a group of young architects who have set out to create a new model of architecture, one that is both beautiful and healthy for the people who build and use them. Inspiration, they say they got in Africa and have now brought home.
What you were doing in Rwanda, you were also doing in Haiti, Malawi, and Poughkeepsie.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
I'm Bill Whitaker.
I'm Anderson Cooper.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi.
I'm John Wertheim.
I'm Scott Pelley. Those stories tonight on 60 Minutes.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The U.S. Surgeon General has called it an urgent public health crisis, a devastating decline in the mental health of kids across the country. According to the CDC, the rates of suicide, self-harm, anxiety, and depression are up among adolescents, a trend that began before the pandemic. Tonight, we'll take you to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, a community trying to help its kids navigate a mental health crisis. As we first reported in May, Wisconsin has the fifth highest increase of adolescent self-harm and attempted suicide in the country, with rates nearly doubling since before the pandemic. In the emergency room at Children's Hospital in Milwaukee, Doctors like Michelle Pickett are seeing more kids desperate for mental health help.
We unfortunately see a lot of kids who have attempted suicide. That is something that we see, I'd say, at least once a shift. Yes, unfortunately.
Dr. Pickett has worked in the ER for 9 years.
Is there any group that's not being impacted?
No, we're seeing it all. Kids, you know, who come from very well-off families, kids who don't, kids who are suburban, kids who are urban, kids who are rural. We're seeing it all.
The surge of families needing help for their kids has revealed a deficit of people and places to treat them. Across the country, the average wait time to get an appointment with a therapist is 48 days, and for children, it's often longer.
What does it say to you that the place they have to come is the emergency room?
That there's something wrong with our system. The emergency room should not be the place to go and get, you know, acute mental health care when you're in a crisis. We are not a nice, calm environment.
But they're desperate.
But we're there and we see everybody. But I wish there were more places that kids could go to get the help that they need.
We just have a couple questions for you to answer on the iPad.
To manage the mental health crisis and heavy caseload, Dr. Pickett introduced an iPad with a series of questions that screen the mental health of every child 10 and older who comes to the ER for any reason. Among the questions, have you been having thoughts about killing yourself? And have you felt your family would be better off if you were dead? Harsh questions that can be lifesavers to the kids who answer them.
We've had 4 kids that I know of personally that came in for completely unrelated problems, so a broken arm or an earache or whatever it was, and actually were acutely suicidal to the point where we needed to transfer them to inpatient facility right then and there. So we're catching kids, you know, who are in very much crisis like that, but we're also catching the kids that just need help and don't know what to do and haven't really talked about this.
According to the CDC, hospital admissions data shows the number of teenage girls who have been suicidal has increased 50% nationwide since 2019.
I thought it was normal.
Sophia Jimenez was one of them.
I remember crying every night and not knowing what was going on, and I felt so alone.
Sophia and her friend Nina Hughes were in 8th grade looking forward to high school when COVID turned their worlds upside down.
I've always been a super smart kid and I've always had really good grades. And then as soon as the pandemic hit, I failed a class. When I was virtual, I had no motivation to do anything. I would just sit in my room, never leave. And it was like obvious signs of depression.
My mental health got really bad, especially my eating disorder. I was basically home alone all day. My parents, well, they noticed that I wasn't eating. I would refuse to eat. So then they ended up taking me to the hospital.
Sophia had to stay in the hospital for 2 weeks before a bed opened up at a psychiatric facility.
Your generation, like, got hit with this in what's supposed to be kind of a fun, carefree time. What was lost? What did you guys lose during the pandemic?
Myself.
Yourself.
Yeah.
I would definitely say there were big pieces of myself that I were definitely lost. I lost friends because we wouldn't see each other. We couldn't go to our first homecoming. I couldn't have an 8th grade graduation. I know that doesn't sound like that big of a deal.
But it's a big deal when you're in 8th grade. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like if the pandemic hadn't happened at all, a lot of my, like, sadness and, like, mental problems would not be as bad as they are. It just made everything worse.
Are we in crisis mode right now?
We are. We are in crisis mode. And it's scary.
Tammy McClough has worked as a child therapist throughout Wisconsin for the last 25 years.
I think there was a hope that, you know, we're back in school, the kids are able to see their friends again and play sports, that this would all go away. Has it?
No. No, I've noticed that the wait lists are longer, kids are struggling with more anxiety, more depression. So we were in a mental health crisis prior to the pandemic.
Did the pandemic accelerate it?
I believe so.
We're coming out of the pandemic, but kids have still lost 2 years. 2 years of socialization, 2 years of education, 2 years of their world kind of being shaken up. So as we get, quote unquote, back to normal, I think kids are struggling. Even when the pandemic's over, this crisis isn't going to be over.
CDC numbers show that even before the pandemic, the number of adolescents saying they felt persistently sad or hopeless was up 40% since 2009. There are lots of theories on why: social media, increased screen time, and isolation. But the research isn't definitive. This past March, Tammy McClough was tapped by Children's Hospital to run an urgent care walk-in clinic specifically open to treat kids' mental health.
May I help you guys?
We are here to get some help.
Open 7 days a week from 3 to 9:30, it's one of the first clinics of its kind in the country.
No, what's going to work for you and what's going to work for you?
So when they come to our clinic, we assess them and we provide them with a therapy session. So we give them some interventions. We give them like a plan, an action plan.
The plans are catered to each child's situation. Actionable things families and kids can do while they look for a doctor or facility to make room for them.
How long have the wait lists been to get help?
Normally you're put on, you're scheduled an appointment within a few months. And then
months?
I know, yeah. And then if you want a child psychiatrist, that you're looking at like months to a year.
How important is it to get them help when they need it immediately?
As days go on, the symptoms get worse. If you have a depressed child, you know, maybe they started out where they were feeling depressed, and then as the days goes on, they're suicidal. So it really, you really do need to get that help and that support right away.
You move backwards.
11-year-old Austin Bringer desperately needed that support during the pandemic. He's a fifth grader at Roosevelt Elementary School in Milwaukee.
How old were you when the pandemic hit?
Yeah, I was 9. I was still going to school, but then I kept hearing on the news in the car, just like pandemic, stay put, quarantine, 14 days.
When they first said, hey, you don't have to go to school, what was your reaction at that moment?
Heaven. But then I realized it's the complete opposite.
Opposite, because like millions of school-age kids, Austin was forced into remote learning for more than a year and disconnected from friends.
There's like this shut-in, like the only way you could see people is through like phones or your family that you live with.
That isolation took a toll on Austin, who was already struggling with news that his parents were getting a divorce.
And that's when I think everything just started to magnify. He was always asking to see his friends. We couldn't. And I remember there was one moment that he was just on the floor, like kicking and punching the air, but couldn't describe why he was upset.
Unable to vent with friends and without access to in-person therapy, Austin's mother, Melissa, says his world began closing in on him.
Felt like he was interacting less and just kind of withdrawing into himself and spending a lot of time by himself. And I went to go tuck him in, and he said, Mom, I'm having suicidal thoughts.
And he was how old?
He was 9. And, like, I was kind of like, I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do.
I just imagine myself going through all these things, like jumping from a building and, like, taking a knife from my kitchen and ending my life. It was over 50 of them that just flooded my mind. I don't really know if it was from all the, like, just antisocialness and not being able. It also felt like with the divorce came a lot of yelling, and it felt like my parents didn't need me anymore. Just really hard to think about that moment.
Mm-hmm. Desperate, Melissa called Austin's pediatrician, who referred her to outpatient therapists and inpatient psychiatric programs, only to be told there were long waiting lists and no beds.
All this stuff is racing through my head, and then for them to say, well, there's no beds right now. And I'm like, how am I going to keep him safe?
In an effort to try and keep kids safe, Wisconsin is trying another approach that's being adopted in other parts of the country.
Hello, how are you guys?
17 pediatric clinics across southeastern Wisconsin have incorporated full-time therapists inside their offices.
Look who I got!
Offering mental health screenings and treatment as part of routine care.
Okay, so let's start with our assessment.
Dr. Brilliant Nimmer was the first pediatrician in Milwaukee to create a therapist's office inside her office.
You're saying we're here together, we're going to all work on this together, not we can't help you, go see somebody else.
Exactly.
And so having the therapist in our clinic to really just have I've got a team together, discuss that patient and family together, to bounce ideas off of each other, because we both know them so well, is so much better for patient care.
Dr. Nimmer's clinic treats an underserved community where families typically struggle to get mental health help. Therapists have treated more than 500 kids here since the pandemic started.
I think as pediatricians and primary care providers, like we can no longer just solely say, you know, mental health providers, you're the only ones that are going to be taking care of our patients in regards to mental health. Like this is now something that we need to be doing too.
Austin Bringer's pediatrician now has a therapist in her office, too. Their family was fortunate to find regular outpatient therapy for his depression.
How do you feel now?
I don't know. It's much better than before. Everything's going up in my life, and knowing that, like, I'm friends with everyone in my class, I'm building better social life. It's fun to just know there's others that like the same things as me.
Austin, it's not an easy thing to talk about all this stuff. Why did you agree to tell us about what you've been
through? Because the world needs to. The world needs to know. Mental health and stuff like that needs to be treated or bad stuff could happen. If you're going through that by yourself, try and contact someone you know, like your friend, your family.
And talk about it.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
We Americans spend 90% of our time inside of buildings, yet most of us give little thought to the role architecture plays in our lives and our health. Tonight, we bring you a story about a group of award-winning young architects who have set out to create a new model of architecture, not a particular style of building, but a way of thinking about how to build, who should build, using what, and for whom. Their nonprofit firm based in Boston is called MASS, short for Model of Architecture Serving Society. And they were inspired early on by the work of Dr. Paul Farmer, who passed away unexpectedly just months after our story first aired last fall. Though trained at Harvard, MASS's founders say they learned the most important lessons of architecture during time they spent in, of all places, Rwanda. Rwanda is a country many people know for one thing, the 1994 genocide that killed more than 800,000 people. Today, Rwanda is at peace, a bustling nation of 13 million working hard to lift its population out of poverty. There are construction projects all around the country, several of them being designed by MASS. Though started by Americans, the head of its team in Kigali today is Rwandan architect Christian Benimana.
I heard that when MASS started, there was no word for architect in your language.
And there is still no word for architect. You have an expression, umuhanga, muguhanga, inyubako.
Meaning?
Expert in the creation of buildings.
The amazing thing about
Benimana told us he dreamed of creating buildings even as a little boy. But with no school of architecture in post-genocide Rwanda, he had to study in China in Mandarin.
Everything is designed around the...
Michael Murphy, MASS's executive director, had a very different path to architecture.
I studied English literature.
Well, that's going to get you far in architecture.
Yes, which is...
Murphy's life took a sharp turn after college when his father was diagnosed with cancer, given just a few weeks to live. Murphy rushed back to Poughkeepsie, New York, to their old home that his dad had spent weekends restoring.
I said, what can I do while I wait here on death watch? And so I started working on the house. And after 3 weeks, he was still alive. 6 weeks, we started working together. After a year and a half, I had fully restored the building. He was fully in remission. And he said, you know, working on this house with you, it saved my life. It healed me.
Whoa. Wow.
And then I said, well, I have to be an architect now.
When he came in wearing these silver cowboy boots.
Alan Ricks and Murphy became fast friends as first-year students at Harvard's Graduate School of Design. But as they dove in, both found something wanting in the curriculum.
We were learning about the heroism of architecture, the beautiful sculptures, the names of the famous architects.
But not so much about how architecture could help people and communities. During first semester, Murphy went to a talk by one of his idols, Dr. Paul Farmer, who had founded the nonprofit Partners in Health to provide medical care for the neediest populations around the world.
He said, we're building hospitals, we're building clinics, we're building schools. And so when I went up to him afterwards to ask, you know, who are the architects that you're working with? He said, you know, architects have never asked us how they could be of service to what we're doing. So we often have to do it ourselves.
Why weren't architects attracted to working with you? I mean, a lot of them care about the poor.
They certainly do. But the way the incentive structure is set up is, hey, you give us money, we'll design something for you.
So when Murphy offered to volunteer on a Partners in Health project in Rwanda the following summer of 2007, Dr. Farmer said, bring it on.
We gave him some very humble projects.
You're smiling. It must be pretty good.
He asked me if I would design a little laundry building.
A laundry building? Well, how did the laundry look?
It looked pretty good. It still looks good.
So good, he called Michael Murphy a few months later and asked if he could help design a brand new hospital for a remote district of 350,000 that didn't even have a doctor.
You're still a student.
Still a student. So I looked around my classmates, said, this crazy call came in. Can anyone help me?
You said yes right away, without hesitation.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? What an opportunity.
But when Dr. Farmer said their first design looked like an army barracks, Murphy decided to take a year off and move to the site called Butaro, where Farmer gave him three challenges he says have defined MASS's work to this day. The hospital should be beautiful. Building it should help as many local people as possible, and it should have natural airflow to prevent the spread of diseases like tuberculosis that often ran rampant in enclosed wards and waiting rooms.
Let me show you this image.
Murphy showed us the design they came up with to move fresh air naturally through each ward.
That's simple physics, where air moves from a lower to higher area.
Beds would go in the middle, giving every patient a beautiful view.
Beauty matters. The spaces around us that are designed with beauty say that we matter as individuals.
If I were a doctor, wouldn't I say, I care about beauty, but I want a heart monitor first.
Why make this a choice between a heart monitor and beauty? Surely we can have both.
What they couldn't have, heavy equipment like front end loaders that were too costly to get to the site.
And so we asked, could we dig it by hand? And we dug the foundation by hand, employ more people. And, you know, shocker, we did it faster and cheaper than if we had the front end loader.
How many people actually worked on this project total?
Over 4,000 people worked on the project.
And instead of trucking in materials, they decided to use volcanic stone that farmers here consider a nuisance because they have to clear it from their fields.
You see the stone everywhere, but normally it's just piled up, and we thought this would be a really valuable material in the U.S. You know, could we use it in a different way?
They designed the whole hospital facade with it, hiring dozens of local masons and spawning a new industry. This woman, who trained at Butaro, is now a forewoman with a team of masons she trains.
And the amount of hours they spend doing this.
Christian Benimana, back from Shanghai, was impressed by the thought given to the process of building and by giving so many people work, improving the local economy.
It is critical for us to have prospect for a better future.
And give people pride in Rwanda.
That's very important to me because it makes me proud as well.
He joined the team and helped design housing for doctors at the hospital.
Very quickly, we had a lot of work because there weren't many other people doing this.
They decided to become a nonprofit architecture firm to work on projects that otherwise couldn't afford high-priced designs. They've built a maternity care center in Malawi, a cholera hospital in Haiti, schools, all with the same principles of airflow, beauty, and creating jobs. A decade later, they have a staff of over 200, more than half of them Rwandan.
This tree is even more beautiful close up.
We visited Butaro Hospital last summer. Its central courtyard felt part medical center, part public gardens, and its covered outdoor waiting room and hallways, in this time of COVID, felt prescient.
This entire hospital is designed around that simple idea that airflow, air movement, are the basic premise that we should design our buildings around, and in particular our hospitals, so that patients don't transmit airborne diseases to each other.
4 hours to the south, we went to see Mass's largest project yet, a 69-building campus for a brand new College of Agriculture funded by American philanthropist Howard Buffett.
This space is really, we want to create a hub.
It's spectacular.
Where Mass is pushing its philosophy to the limit. As Alan Rick showed us, just about everything here, from the earthen walls,
the lines you see are the layers,
to the furniture,
the woven backrests of these chairs,
is being made locally. Under Christian Benimana's leadership, Mass started a furniture division to collaborate with local artisans on creative designs instead of ordering from a catalog.
It's one thing to go to Dubai and Turkey and China and Europe and pick a chair from a showroom, put it on a flight and bring it here. It's another thing to figure out a system that can create more opportunities for growth.
And if you're thinking Mass's model could never work in the U.S., Michael Murphy wasn't sure either until he was challenged by a community leader back home.
He said, you're doing all this work in Haiti and Rwanda. When are you going to come back to your hometown and work with us in Poughkeepsie? We need a lot of help.
Poughkeepsie, like many once thriving industrial cities, has seen factories close, its downtown choked off by highways, its storefronts boarded up. To top it off, its creek flooded during Hurricane Irene.
We had just been in one of the most rural places in the world, and we had seen a hospital change the economy. I said, why can't we do that same thing here in Poughkeepsie?
So Mass opened a small office on Main Street and got to work.
Yeah. Radiant light coming off of there.
Converting the city's old trolley barn into an art space and designing housing. It's helping turn this old building into a food hall.
We're going to save this building.
And converting this long-abandoned factory into a new headquarters for the environmental group Scenic Hudson.
If you look up, you can see that this whole opening was once a window.
That was a window?
That was all a window.
Oh, my goodness.
Murphy says old buildings like this were designed to let in fresh air. But with the invention of air conditioning, big windows became a liability. So we shrunk them and sealed our buildings airtight.
This is a sort of devil's bargain because it has made all of our buildings have really limited airflow. And hence, during COVID, we were all very vulnerable.
We saw it with the nursing homes.
And the prisons.
Do you think that COVID will change architecture for everybody?
Everyone around the world is going through a shift in their understanding of the buildings around us, that they may make us sicker, that they could make us healthier if they were better designed.
Mass's new design will reopen the windows and, like a cutting-edge version of the hospital in Rwanda, use a solar-powered system to heat and cool air at each window, eliminating traditional air conditioning and heating entirely. And they have a plan to transform that flooding creek that's become something of a garbage dump.
Some gutters, we get shopping carts.
What is that, an air conditioner? Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Mass landscape architect Sierra Bainbridge came here with ideas about widening the creek to help with flooding. But also,
if you're taking a holistic view of the problem, then the solution also begins to be a holistic view.
Mass came up with designs to turn the blighted creek into beautiful park space that would run all through Poughkeepsie.
Each project has to not solve for that one thing. We have to be thinking about how can we make design have the biggest possible impact.
It's a lesson Mass believes can apply in many American cities. They have projects now in Cleveland, Birmingham, and Santa Fe. And their gospel of architecture serving society has reached inside that ivory tower whose teachings they once found lacking. In 2021, Murphy taught lessons he learned in Rwanda back at Harvard.
There's some clear simplicity to it. There's things we have to build. There's people we have to hire. There's materials we have to use. And if you think about the whole thing as a design project, you can have a lot more impact.
In June, Mass was awarded the highest honor given by the American Institute of Architects, its 2022 Architecture Firm Award.
Hello, snack lovers. Curb your cravings with My Mochi ice cream. Imagine a scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream in your favorite flavor. Now imagine that scoop wrapped up in the sweetest, softest dough known to mankind. That's My Mochi ice cream. Sweet, chewy, cool, and creamy, all in one bite. It's quite possibly the most joyfully chill sensation you've ever had in your life. My Mochi ice cream comes in tons of fabulous flavors, like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are about 80 calories each, and it's also gluten-free. You can find My Mochi at Target or visit MyMochi.com to find a grocery store near you. That's MyMochi.com. Discover the joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today.
We all have busy lives these days, and we don't want to waste a day recovering after a night out. That's why ZBiotics is the answer we've all been looking for. Their probiotic was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. This is a proactive solution that wards off feeling miserable the next day instead of a reactive approach like drinking electrolytes or eating greasy food. Enhance your mornings with ZBiotics. Go to ZBiotics.com/CBS to get 15% off your first order when you use code CBS at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/CBS and use the code CBS at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and our good times.
I'm Sharon Alfonsi. We'll be back next week with another edition of 60 Minutes.
Prime members, you can listen to 60 Minutes ad-free on Amazon Music.
Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.